selling to Europe despite these threats. I will say this, China and India continue to buy Russian fuel. And as long as they do, Russia can continue to survive.
Ali Velshi is anchor and economics correspondent for MSNBC. Ali, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Les.
You're listening to Here and Now.
Republicans have made railing against critical race theory part of their midterm campaigns. The professor who developed CRT says it's much bigger than one party's political manipulation.
Well, critical race theory is actually a prism and it's a practice.
Professor Kimberly Crenshaw on the real intention of critical race theory on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
I'm Garo Hagopian. Buckingham Palace says Queen Elizabeth, Britain's longest-reigning monarch, has died at 96 after 70 years on the throne. With the Queen's death, her son Charles becomes Britain's new king. The head of Ukraine's atomic energy operator is accusing Russia of trying to steal Europe's largest nuclear plant. The official says Russia plans to cut the plant in southeastern Ukraine from the Ukrainian electricity grid, leaving it on the brink of a radiation disaster. A Utah lawmaker and prominent attorney for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints advised a church bishop not to report a confession of child sex abuse to authorities, a decision that allowed the abuse to continue for years. That's according to records filed in a lawsuit that says Republican State Rep. Merrill Nelson took a phone call from a bishop reporting that a church member had sexually abused his daughters. You're listening to Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston and your NPR station, and from Indeed, designed to be an end-to-end hiring solution to help businesses attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Learn more at Indeed.com/NPR. And MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software for technical computing and model-based design. MathWorks, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is live special coverage from NPR News. I'm Peter O'Dowd, along with Celeste Headlee, with news that the Queen of England has died. An announcement from the royal family this afternoon confirmed that Queen Elizabeth II died peacefully at her summer home in Scotland at the age of 96 years old. Willem Marx is a reporter for NPR in London, and he joins me now for the latest. Willem, what do we know? This is a breaking news situation.
Yes, well, we have now had an official statement from the palace, Buckingham Palace, in which they've said that the Queen has died peacefully at Balmoral this afternoon. That's UK time. It says the King and Queen consort, that's Charles and his wife Camilla, will remain at Balmoral this evening and will return to London tomorrow. Obviously, over the last few hours, we have been aware that Queen Elizabeth was not well. Her doctors at lunchtime this morning had, through a statement again from Buckingham Palace, said that she'd been placed under medical supervision. We knew that her four children, who were either already in the area in Scotland, around the Balmoral estate, around 40 miles west of the city of Aberdeen. They were either already with her or travelled up to be with her over the course of this afternoon. That also included several of her grandchildren to make sure that they were in her presence either just prior to or following her passing. And the country now will enter, obviously, a period of mourning. And at some point in the not-too-distant future, Charles will be officially proclaimed as king. She's had some health problems over the course of this week that have been made public. Her doctors have previously talked about mobility issues, and just yesterday, Wednesday, she'd actually been encouraged to rest rather than to attend a virtual meeting of something called the Privy Council, which is a kind of gathering of some of her senior advisors. But it's just 2 days ago, Peter, that she was meeting the new Prime Minister Liz Truss and formally appointing her to that role, continuing with her duties.
So in that sense, was it a surprise to people that just several days ago she was shaking hands with the new Prime Minister and now this?
We saw her, you know, taking an active role, standing to greet Liz Truss. She's a 96-year-old woman, and the fact that she was continuing with her duties in whatever capacity, you know, statistically is pretty remarkable anyway. Throughout periods of ill health in the past, we've heard statements from the palace that she has continued with her work. And on this occasion today, the statement was unusual in that it talked about her medical circumstances with a bit more specificity. And as a consequence, people, you know, over the last few hours have been gathering outside the Balmoral estate in Scotland, where she often spends much of her time over the summer, and also outside Buckingham Palace, her official residence in London, where over the next day or so, we would expect that her body will be lying in state inside the throne room, inside Buckingham Palace, surrounded by members of a British Army regiment, the Grenadier Guards, having possibly also spent some time in Edinburgh, the Scottish capital, because, of course, that is where she has died, before making the journey south from Edinburgh to London on a specially built train. This is obviously an event that's been years in the planning, and a lot of the focus for many people here in the UK will be, you know, waiting for those formal moments and, of course, the funeral itself.
Of course, this is a historic moment for the people of the United Kingdom, but also for the world. And for an American audience, Willem, can you just remind us how important Queen Elizabeth has been to the British people in her 70-year reign?
Yes, I mean, she's the longest-serving monarch, of course, in history. She took that title from her, I think, her great-grandmother, I should say, Queen Victoria. She's been on the throne as of February this year for 70 years, and that was marked over the course of 4 days this summer with a platinum jubilee celebration. But for many of us, you know, she's obviously, I've been alive throughout her reign. I don't really know many people that don't think of her as being the most sort of central force for stability in the United Kingdom. And that's been the case throughout, you know, many, many tumultuous decades of politics and conflict. She took to the throne a few years following the Second World War. She lived through that, served in an auxiliary force during that conflict. And, you know, she has served over the course of, you know, more than a dozen prime ministers. So despite the fact that we've gone through a period of relatively tumultuous politics here in the UK over the last few years, we've just got our fourth prime minister in 6 years. Queen Elizabeth has been a rock of stability throughout that process.
Well, to that point, we are in a newly precarious time for Europe and the United Kingdom. There's a new prime minister, as you say, an energy crisis. How will the Queen's death, do you think, resonate at an already difficult moment for the country?
There is the possibility that it will unite people in a way that has not happened necessarily over the last few years. Events like Brexit have created a great deal of political and personal division, even amongst families. And for Liz Truss taking on a very complex role and a very challenging situation already, and just this morning she was making huge announcements about government intervention to try and stave off a bit of a crisis when it comes to household energy costs over the course of this winter. This will be a very, very difficult moment for her to lead the country, having just assumed this role. And I'm no doubt for the royal family itself, you know, they are family members above all, of this lady who's just passed away. And for them, it will be difficult to try and find a balance, I'm sure, between ceremonial and private grief.
There will be many days to remember the Queen. Of course, as you mentioned, we're also thinking about what will happen next in the coming days. A transition like this is highly planned and has been planned for many years, I understand. So just walk us through some of the next steps here, if you could, please.
Yeah, there will be a formal process by which Charles, for many, many years, heir to the throne, the Prince of Wales, will be formally proclaimed as the King. That will follow on from some of the funeral processes as well. But, you know, the United Kingdom does not have an absence of a monarchy. The moment the Queen has passed away, her heir, in this case, Charles, will take over. There will be the tolling of bells across the country. Flags will fly at half mast. This train that will carry her body now south to London over the next day or so, I have no doubt there will be large crowds of mourners alongside the track. Throughout the country, through Scotland, north of England, down towards London. And then there will be a series of ceremonies. We'll no doubt hear from the Prime Minister over the next few hours from Downing Street. Parliament will be suspended. There will be some pretty seismic changes when it comes to the ceremonial aspects of Britain's government.
As you say, the monarchy never ends. It just continues. So what do we know about how Elizabeth's son, Prince Charles, now King Charles, how will he undertake this great responsibility?
Well, he has been waiting for this decades, as you can quite imagine. He will be taking on a ceremonial role, but he himself has some deeply held convictions that over the last few decades he has been willing to share with others around things like the environment, climate, conservation. But of course, you know, as a head of state here in the UK, he takes on an essentially apolitical role as a constitutional head of state. And so it will be up to him to try and rebuild what will no doubt be a very sadly affected nation following his mother's death. And it'll be up to him to try and, I suspect, preserve the aura around the monarchy, but at the same time, try and lead it into the modern era. You know, 70 years on the throne, Queen Elizabeth's legacy has spanned just absolutely extraordinary changes in Britain's place in the world in particular, but also on the domestic front. The economy and society here has changed drastically since she took the throne, and it will be left, therefore, to her heir, Charles, to try and to move the monarchy forward.
We have just a minute left here, but I couldn't help but notice today in London, the pictures coming through as we waited for this news, a gray, rainy, somber day. What is the mood in London? If you could give us your parting thoughts, please.
It really has been a very gray, overcast day with quite substantial amounts of rain. And already on the streets around me now, there is a pretty somber silence. I'm sure many people absorbing the news across the country will be feeling the same way. It's like shock. And yet at the same time, no surprise, this is a woman well into her 90s, Peter.
Willem Marks for NPR in London with the news that Queen Elizabeth II died peacefully today at the age of 96. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is live special coverage from NPR News. We'll be right back.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and your NPR station, and from Noom, providing an online evaluation and the tools to help people lead healthier lives through behavior change. More information at Noom, Noom.com. And Indeed, designed to be an end-to-end hiring solution to help businesses attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Learn more at Indeed.com/NPR.
This is special coverage from NPR News. We are following the bulletin from Buckingham Palace announcing the death of Queen Elizabeth II at the age of 96. We'll have the latest news at the top of the hour. But let's turn now to Syria for an update on the civil war there, which has been going on for more than 10 years. It is the world's largest humanitarian crisis. That's according to Charles Lister of the Middle East Institute. Nearly 7 million refugees and most people there are living in poverty. What is the state of the war? We'll ask Borzo Diragahi. He's been in Syria over months and years. He's international correspondent for The Independent, and he's in Istanbul on Skype. Hi there.
Hi.
So many people remember the pro-democracy protests in Syria in 2011 and then the brutal crackdown by authoritarian leader Bashar al-Assad. Can you give us an idea of where things stand now?
Well, it is a sort of frozen conflict situation. The regime of Bashar al-Assad is essentially victorious. It has stamped out the rebellion with the help of Russian air power and Iranian-backed militias and Iranian military advisors, with the regime controlling most of the country, but huge enclaves under the control of rebel groups in the northeast. There's the Syrian Kurds, who control a sort of rather large territory. In the northwest, there is a Turkish-controlled influence run by Turkey's armed clients in Syria, as well as another enclave that is basically under the sway of a jihadi group that is a kind of a descendant of al-Qaeda. But, you know, there you have it. You have the country in this sort of frozen conflict, these separatist enclaves growing.
Interestingly enough, you reported on Syrians who both support the fight in Ukraine against Russia and have given advice for Ukrainians there based on the brutal treatment that they have received, and they blame Russia for that. Can you explain the connections between the long-going war in Syria and what's happening in Ukraine?
Well, essentially, the same tactics that were used by Russian forces in their war in Chechnya in the late 90s were then used again against the Syrian rebels just a few years ago, until a few years ago. And, you know, those sort of brutal tactics became very clear earlier this year, were becoming the same kind of tactics that Russia was using against the Ukraine during its invasion. And so I spent a couple days there in Syria, in the northwest of Syria, speaking to people who were very closely watching what was happening in Ukraine, both out of solidarity and because a Russian defeat in Ukraine would have implications for them, they concluded, and they're probably accurately, but mostly just because they felt sympathy for what the Ukrainians were going through.
But tell me about how the people are coping more than 10 years of what is essentially a very brutal war. International groups say that Bashar al-Assad has used chemical weapons at times against his own people. And they are now, as we mentioned, most Syrians are below the poverty line. What kind of effect has this had on the population?
I mean, Syria all across the board is in a terrible situation. You know, the country's humanitarian situation is dire, both in regime-controlled areas and outside of regime-controlled areas. Corruption is rife. You know, armed groups, whether they are jihadi groups in rebel areas or pro-Assad mafias in regime-controlled areas, they basically dominate neighborhoods and villages. They take whatever people have, and the value of the Syrian currency has collapsed and plummeted over the last 12 years. And as you pointed out, you know, maybe half the country has been displaced, either internally or externally, and become refugees. You see that more in Europe and Turkey, of course, where most of the refugees are headed. But really, Syrians are becoming a presence in almost every European country as they flee the war and settle down in parts of Europe.
Why do you think this conflict has fallen out of the headlines in many areas?
Well, it's I think that's a good question, because it's still a very dangerous situation. The main war has ended, but there's still a lot of tensions there between Iran and the United States, between Israel and the United States. So there's this potential for Syria to explode again. But I think that, you know, to some extent, it's not a dynamic conflict. The popular rebellion has been crushed and defeated. The pro-democracy activists are either dead in prison or in exile. You know, so for us Westerners, there's few people to support in this situation.
That is Borzu Dargahi, international correspondent at The Independent. He's also senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, speaking with us about what's happening more than a decade into Syria's civil war. Borzu, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll continue to monitor developments from Balmoral in Scotland, where Queen Elizabeth has died at the age of 96. We'll keep you updated on this news throughout the day, right here on your NPR news station. I'm Celeste Headlee in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Peter O'Dowd in Phoenix. This is special coverage from NPR News.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the Museum of Science in Boston, providing pre-K through grade 12 engineering curricula, from We Engineer to Engineering the Future, with teacher guides, storybooks, kits, and videos, all designed to fuel dynamic STEM education. More at mos.org.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. The health of delivery drivers, warehouse workers, construction workers often is at risk during heat waves. That's because without federal heat policies, they have little to no protection on the job. We'll look at an effort to change that and why it's taken so long. That's next time on Here and Now.